This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
He hunts, he lifts, he argues, he jokes. Joe Rogan is unpolished, unpredictable, and unstoppable. With millions of downloads, his podcast has become a kind of digital man cave for guys across the globe, including right here in Australia. But what's really driving his influence? And why do so many men, from tradies to CEOs, idolise him, even when he spouts conspiracy theories or invites far-right figures onto his show?
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know. And if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Good afternoon, Lauren Rosewarne.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
What is it about Joe Rogan that makes him so appealing to men?
So I think we have to caution in the sense that if it was an easy thing to identify, then we could replicate it. Mm. And this is always that challenge with sort of reverse engineering a success story. What were the elements that worked so that we could just go and do it over and over and over again? So it's really hard to work out exactly what it is that's appealing about him. But there's obviously something, because in Australia, he's one of the top downloaded podcasts. In the US, he is as well. So there's something there. I think part of it is that he does come across to a lot of men as an everyman, in the sense that he's not coming at topics as arrogant or as overly even informed. He's going in with what seems like genuine curiosity. And that curiosity kind of mirrors the listener, in the sense that even though I think he does have a political agenda and there is some ideology there, he does go into his conversations with a kind of willingness to unpack ideas. I mean, some of his episodes are 3 to 4 hours long. Oh, wow. So he does really long form, kind of the kind of conversations you'd overhear people in bars having after they've had a few too many drinks, you know, sort of general philosophical kind of stuff that's sort of pulling bits and pieces from all kinds of places. That, I think, makes the listener feel as though they're not listening to something that's too highbrow, but is rather a conversation that is generally accessible.
I mean, his show, it's unstructured and unscripted, I suppose. Do you think that's what his audience find, the raw, off-the-cuff style, more relatable or trustworthy than, say, polished media like Joy Drive?
That's the standard we set, Warren. Look, I think there is something to be said about the perceived authenticity, because authenticity means lots of different things to different people, and there's lots of people who are thoroughly inauthentic but can fake it, right? So, but I think he comes across as someone who's an authentic truth seeker, and so often, and particularly around the conspiracy theory stuff, which is I think a lot of people who don't listen to him, I would be in that camp, hear mostly about him when it's his circulating stuff that's in the sort of dangerous conspiracy theory realm. He comes into these conversations with an open-mindedness, or at least he seems to suggest that he's just asking questions. And that, I think, is appealing to lots of men who similarly might have their own questions, but would find it inaccessible to listen to, for example, a science or a medical podcast, and prefer to do it in the format of someone who feels like they're at least able to attract really good talent often and coming at it with a genuine curiosity, and who seems not a snob, not, you know, an intellectual, but someone who's accessible.
It's interesting, because I find that I wonder if that's a good way to approach topics like conspiracy theories, is rather than say, oh, it's a load of hogwash, don't be an idiot, it's not proven by any data, because that might get people, get their backs up straight away and close them down to listening. Is Joe Rogan in a position where you can go in with some conspiracy theory, and is he curious enough that he sort of takes people along a journey to realise that, oh, actually, it is a load of rubbish, you're right, we've been open about it, we've been curious about it, it's rubbish. I don't know. I haven't listened to him, so I don't know. But Could there be an advantage there?
There absolutely could, in the sense of, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of why he's able to attract very, very high-profile guests, right? Part of it is, you know, why has Bernie Sanders gone on the show? Why have all these people gone on the show? Partly it's because it's the most listened to podcast in the world, basically. Anyone who's got something to sell will go on that podcast. Now, though, to then take that assumption and say, well, he'll lead us to a journey of clarity in terms of thinking, I would say the evidence suggests that's not actually the case. He platforms people like, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr., who has long been a vaccine skeptic. And those kind of lines are in sync with things that Joe Rogan seems to believe himself. So I think we need to be a bit careful where, yes, there's the capacity to take people on a journey. Is that actually happening? I'm not sure, because his platform seems to be really good at distributing and disseminating some ideas that I'd consider quite problematic.
And I suppose also on the other side of that coin is, you know, we elevate, if we look at climate change, for example, and, you know, there's no debate about the science. We know what it says.
Yeah.
But in order to be balanced, we almost have to give extra weight to ideas that have no research whatsoever.
And this is something, oh, absolutely. This is something I've written about before, because it used to drive me crazy on I mean, now I just don't watch it, but commercial morning television would constantly do this, where they'd have a climate scientist on, let's say professor in biology or something like that on, and Pauline Hanson as an example, debate this topic. Now, these are not apples and apples comparisons, but yet that it was constant. It drove me crazy. It was so often about every issue. And it's like, when you're creating a debate around a non-debate topic, you're validating that there is equal evidence here, and it's just a matter of, you know, sort of hashing it out. And again, there aren't great people on the other side of some debates, and partly that's because there isn't the science to substantiate it.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne about Joe Rogan's massive following and why men connect with his message and what it might mean for masculinity, media, and critical thinking, importantly, in 2025. Lauren, there's a whole, like a human optimization element, isn't there? There's testosterone injections.
Well, that's how he's paying for this. So I think that's important to make this point as well, is that there is invariably with podcasts a question of follow the money, right? Who is making money if you're not paying to listen to a podcast, right? Just like commercial radio, you're paying through advertising, right? In the sense that you are part of a listener base that is sold to advertisers. So think about what products are being sold on Joe Rogan's show. And often it is things like supplements and different kind of well-being enhancements, or supposed well-being enhancements, because as you just hinted at, part of what he's selling is this idea you too can be better.
Rogan's content and guests, I understand, have changed a lot over the years. Have you seen, is there a shift in the kind of ideas or ideologies he's promoting now? Has he changed?
Yeah, I mean, he started off as a Democrat. So the fact that now he is credited, and this is me with my social science hat on, I'm interested in measuring influence, because I think it's one thing to say he's hugely popular, but then to say, well, does that matter, right? Just because something's popular doesn't necessarily mean it necessarily does anything measurable. In his case, though, I think you can actually link a huge following base that he has with young men and the way young men voted in the last US presidential election. But how do we explain it in Australia? Right. His podcast is listened to, you know, per percentage wise, or percentage of the population. Again, in Australia, like the US, his podcast is one of the most popular. Why then did young men in Australia, because this is what Peter Dutton was assuming, not vote conservative the way they did in the US? What is the cultural difference here that can make men listen to the podcast but not necessarily be as persuaded by it?
Mark in Preston. Continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the obvious answer to that is Rogan's not talking about Australian politics any great detail in the way that he does talk about American politics. So I think there's an arm's length bit there that's a bit different.
Mark from Preston says, Rogan says the stuff no one else dares to say. Not always right, but always interesting.
Yeah, look, I think there's definitely, he has that appeal that he's daring to ask the questions others won't. And that's part of what he is selling. That said, there is a lot of reasons as to why I would say more established media doesn't ask some of these questions. And partly you could say that's because the answers are quite dangerous. Because even putting the question out there, such as should we be rethinking our entire vaccination schedule, right? Getting people to think about that has them questioning years and years and years of data.
Sophie in Thornbury, my partner plays Rogan in the car and I honestly find it exhausting. It's just blokes ranting for hours.
I had an Uber driver in the US once, and that was my first exposure to Joe Rogan. I didn't know actually what I was listening to. It sounded like, I mean, yes, it felt like I was a hostage in the car, but it was unrelenting. It was the kind of conversation you might overhear it on a train and move carriages to avoid. But again, I'm definitely not the audience for it.
Nina's got a good point. As a teacher, I worry about boys idolizing him. There's a lack of critical thinking when they repeat his ideas.
But this is what, and I'm quoted in the, there's a Sydney Morning Herald article about Joe Rogan, which is sort of what got us talking about this. And that was actually one of my concerns when I was talking to the journalist, is I'm worried about it because he's selling that he's doing critical thinking, right? Because he's daring to ask the questions. Is he? Or is he repeating a whole lot of conspiracy and putting on guests that don't actually contest it? Because for young audience, and again, his audience does skew young, these aren't necessarily the kids who have those critical thinking skills themselves to understand that what he's espousing is actually potentially quite dangerous.
Do we teach critical thinking still in schools, or is that gone as well?
No, I think we do. And again, though, I do have that hesitancy to say, oh, you know, schools have, because again, we want schools to do absolutely everything. I think we all, you and I and every student, and, you know, on a lifelong journey, we should always be doing this. Isn't something that should finish at school. We should always try and think and ask questions of whatever we're listening to and whatever we're reading. But it's becoming harder and harder to do that because as things get more polished, it gets harder to tell the difference between good stuff and stuff that's actually trying to either sell us something or manipulate us.
Be curious. I love doing that.
Be curious.
Lauren, always good to chat with you. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, Lauren.
That's Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.